It's WEEI Football Sunday. Arkin here, Mego here, Shime here as well. And joining us on the hotline, your friend and mine, NBC Sports Boston pre- and post-game show. You can also hear him live on these airwaves on Sundays, of course. Also on Tuesdays and Thursdays with the midday show and also WEEI afternoons. I'm talking, of course, about the great Tom E. Curran, who joins us right now. Mr. Curran, how we doing?
Good morning, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving week.
Happy Thanksgiving week to you, too, and a very good morning to you as well. Tom, let's start with something that Gerard Mayo talked about this week, where he said that in the initial team meeting this last week, he highlighted areas the team has grown since the start of the season and identified new targets that he wanted to hit. What would you say is the main department in which this team has improved since the start of the season?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think that they have certainly improved on the offensive line, which is somewhat damning with faint praise, but it was a jailbreak at times during the Jets and 49ers games. They've at least shored it up enough to make it possible for a rookie quarterback to have enough time to create on his own. They've improved at quarterback. I think they've certainly improved in the play calling and game planning by Alex Van Pelt. If you look at some of their numbers early in the game there, outstanding, and I asked May about that this week, the first 15, and how well they've done there. So I would say those are places that they have certainly improved. Their run defense has been shoddy. I think DeMarcus Covington is still trying to figure out when is best for him to be aggressive, when is best for him to take his foot off the gas defensively. Which, you know, what do you want to be defensively if you have an offense that actually suddenly can now score over 20 points a game? So to me, and that hasn't existed the last 2 years. So defensively, I think that they've probably devolved, whereas on offense, they've evolved as the season has gone on.
Tom, on that point on the offense, Shime and I are both we're lusting after a possibility of seeing a Drake May design run, especially in the red zone. Why do you think they haven't shown those design runs for him yet? And do you think that it's a possibility that we'll see some out there from the playbook in the weeks coming forward?
This was something, Mego, that Van Pelt talked about in the week after May came back from his concussion. Actually, he never really left with the concussion. He played right away. But they were asked about design runs and how they would deal with May, and he said, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do design runs. He gets enough opportunities to scurry around with the football on normal scrambles. We're not going to be a team that does that. It puts him in harm's way. I didn't agree with it then. We probably talked about it that weekend. I don't agree with it now. You have a 6'4", 225, tremendous athlete who, if you're not going to do that on 4th and 2, 3rd and 3, and you have a guy who can get on the edge and give you a run-pass option, then you're missing the boat. I mean, just go ahead and draft the slowest quarterback you can. Obviously, I'm hyperbolizing, but, you know, why would you take that arrow out of your quiver and say, we're not going to use that? So I think that everyone is, and I think at some point the Patriots need to, and probably will, start to figure out a way to run him. But, again, it's the same thing, I think, with everybody right now on this staff. He's the most important person in the organization right now. He's the most important asset they have. Do you want to be the guy who puts him on the edge and gets his head taken off by Calais Campbell? Sorry, didn't know.
But Tom, isn't it kind of like related a little bit to the way that they treat him at the beginning of the season, where it just seems like they are so, so cautious with him?
Yes, it does. Because they understand how valuable he is. But there comes a point, too, where you have to go and treat him like a football player. You don't treat him as a deity. And I think that that's one really interesting thing. Thank God he is who he is, personality-wise. And hopefully he can stay that way as the Patriots continue to maybe kind of put him in bubble wrap / pedestal, tell him he's special. He is special. Don't tell him that. He can figure it out on his own. You know, Bill Parcells and Bill Belichick hated franchise celebrity quarterbacks because they started to get an outsized feel for themselves. And Tom Brady certainly became that as his career came and went along. And the Patriots are treating May, who is their most important asset, differently. And I don't think that that is it bears more scrutiny as we go along.
Tom, you talked about the defense kind of devolving as the season has gone on a bit. Christian Gonzalez injured entering today's game. He's out there trying to do some warm-ups, see if he can be a full go for today's game. If he does play, do you expect him to be, you know, 80-90% of what he normally is, or is this going to be a shadow of his normal self today against a Dolphins team that has a lot of offensive weapons?
I know. Usually when you're game time, Shime, it's 50-50. So probably not 80 or 90. It's, you know, he's that close to the edge. There's going to be some things that he's just not comfortable doing, whether it's cutting to one side or the other or backpedaling or whatever, all of which would be bad deals. So you're going to want to protect his snaps and protect his ankle because he is your best asset defensively, if you ask me. So it would certainly not help. And I think that the way that they're playing right now, Miami has been very explosive since Tua has come back from his concussion, very accurate. And he's also been very accurate against the blitz. So any pressure given has generally resulted in Tua figuring it out and getting completion. So, again, we saw the blitz not work predictably against a 16-year veteran last week, and the Patriots kind of stuck with it. Will they do that again this week, or do they just play back coverage, understand Tyreek Hill is who Tyreek Hill is, Tua is accurate, Jonnu Smith is a beast suddenly, and let's just try and make them matriculate the ball down the field a little bit.
I would like to see that as well. Based on the way that the defensive scheme was drawn up last week and how steadfast they were in sticking to it, what do you think about them being a little bit more flexible this week in the event that someone like Jonnu Smith emerges and they have to put more attention on him? Do you think that this is, and we've seen this with Mayo, Tom, this season, he does sort of like to have an identity for his team. He doesn't mind telegraphing what the team's going to do on any given Sunday and how they're going to go out and play. Do you think that they learned a lesson about maybe being a little too inflexible when it comes to these game plans?
I would hope so. And I guess one thing, if you and I see it, and everybody in the region sees it while we're sitting on our couches, they must see it too. We have to presume that they show up every week and spend 80 hours and, you know, can add two and two and get four. They must see the same thing. So there has to be, generally speaking, a cogent reason for why they're doing something that seems logically flawed, as in continuing to blitz Matt Stafford when you know that he has telepathy with Cooper Kupp. We saw the same thing, though, with Geno Smith. We saw the same thing with Aaron Rodgers. Every time they've gotten in with a veteran quarterback, they're like, oh, I know what you're doing here. So, yeah, maybe they do have to be more multiple, but then it gets back to the conversation, Christian, of do they have the guys to be more multiple? You know, no Peppers, no Bentley, and it's been that way for a long time, so I understand people going, well, it didn't just happen. But there is a talent drain that they've encountered as well. Like, are they good enough at the second level in terms of coverage linebackers? Not really. Tobias is a pretty good linebacker, but he's not an adept coverage guy. So if Jonnu starts to chew people up in the middle of the field, he might continue chewing them up.
Tom, Jerod Mayo has said that he has this goal for the team towards the end of the year to be this team that nobody wants to play. That it's just kind of one of those annoying spoiler teams. Do you feel like they're close to becoming that team? Can they be that team with the personnel that they have talent-wise?
Yeah, I definitely think that they are. Now, they might be a team that nobody in the bottom half of the league wants to play because they're like, oh, this team's pretty good. It's just like us, North Carolina. They're not, to me, they right now are not a team that's between 28 and 32. I think that they've nosed up to the 22 to 28 range.
Well done. Good job, guys.
Right? So, which is progress, but I still think it'll be interesting to see when they get in with Buffalo. And Buffalo's like, okay, yeah, that's adorable what you guys did against the Titans last, but it was adorable. You almost won. And then they pound them. And this is a great test. I really think that this is a weird season because it's so much not contingent on wins and losses. You don't sit here and say, well, how are they going to match up with Calais Campbell and Zach Seiler and Chop Robinson? Because we just don't get into the matchups because the wins and losses are kind of moot, not completely, but somewhat. And I think that this is an interesting matchup despite all that. They're going to Miami, which is a place that's been a bugaboo for them. They are in the division. This is a team that they are basically kind of looking eyeball to eyeball with. Miami's a better team talent-wise. But how do they perform down there? So I think that this is a good, really good checkpoint, because you don't want to see them get drilled down there. If they lose 34-10, you're like, okay, well, that just undid the last 4 weeks where you went 2-2 against crap teams or teams that quit.
Tom, do we expect more from Christian Barmore this week? We're going to ratchet him up and get him ready to go?
I would expect so. I expect, Chris, that they'll just keep adding. And A-Chain has been back and being more used on A-Chain. So it's important to get something going on the ground, something going in terms of stopping the ground game. Because even the Rams last week, they didn't kill it on the ground, but relative to their previous performances, it was pretty good. They had been one of the worst teams in the NFL, the Los Angeles Rams, prior to last week's game, and I think they ended up with 4.2 yards per carry. So that's still a place that teams are going to look at film all week and go, I think we can get some business done here.
All right, Tom, before we let you go, Robert Kraft denied entry in the Hall of Fame once again. Does this mean that the Stacey James offensive is going to get ratcheted up to 11 now, or does that mean they're going to just chill out and forget about it and just assume that there's somebody on that committee who's never going to let him in? I mean, what do you make of this?
I think it's interesting. I think Robert's more, and I've said this before, more resigned to it. And he feels worse for people like Stacey, his family, the people around him who would like to see him get in and see him get honored. He actually feels a level of, it's okay, it doesn't bother me. Because clearly, there comes a point where you become a parody of yourself. And I'm referring to the Hall of Fame. When you know that there's a deserving candidate, you're not letting him in, and he's due it 4 or 5 times, you're like, okay, well, I'm not going to pay attention to this anymore because I don't know who Ralph Hay is, God bless him, and I don't know who whatever gentleman went in last year, Buzzy Malone from 1903. Who knows? So it becomes laughable, and I think the Kraft should feel that way. I mean, if they want to, hell, just throw something in the stadium for the guy. You don't need a mustard yellow jacket. I used to love the Hall of Fame. That was my favorite Hall of Fame. I used to love it when it was outside in late July, early August, and they had it on the lawn at Canton, and you would watch those speeches, and it was a very enjoyable Hall of Fame ceremony. And now it's just, as with everything, has been co-opted and bastardized and monetized. So it's just, I mean, who even knows who the voters are sometimes?
Yeah.
Anyway.
No idea.
I think him actually coming out and saying, I love the Hall of Fame. I love the tradition of the game. It's important to me, but I don't really need that to stamp my legacy of what I've been able to do here in New England with the help of a lot of people, Bill Belichick included.
Belichick, who, by the way, is campaigning a lot harder for Rodney Harrison than old RKK these days. That is the voice of Tom E. Kern joining us here on WEEI NFL Sunday. You can hear him and see him on NBC Sports Boston pre- and post-game show for the Patriots and Dolphins today. Tommy, thanks so much.
Okay, guys, bye.
Thanks,
right,
Tom.
See you later. That's Tom E. Kern joining us here on the program. We have a little bit of news. Christian Gonzalez out there in T-shirts in the initial warm-ups, that means he's probably playing today.
Okay.
And as Tom just told us, when you're a game-time decision, which it looks like he's still in that realm, it's probably 50-50, may not be Gonzalez at 100% out there, which means a lot more on Jonathan and Marcus Jones and maybe some of these other guys in the secondary trying to keep up with the speed of the Miami Dolphins. We'll get to a little bit more of that as well as the inactives, full inactives coming up at 11:30. But first, here's Chris Scheim to tell you what's trending. That was Drake May back on Patriots Monday down at Gillette. Andy Hart and I talking to him, asking him about all the praise he's been getting.
Yeah, it's a hard-hitting question
there. Interesting because Andy Hart's the one who says, and he's right there with Scheim in terms of all the praise and love for Drake May. By the way, shut up, Mego. And he was very into that whole thing.
Thought you were just going to let that one slide.
No, I wasn't, but I was trying to get. I was trying not to forget my point.
Do you hear how much everyone
either.
Loves you?
Yes, all the time. Who wouldn't? But no, I wanted to know how he was dealing with all the constant praise that he's been getting, if he's been hearing it, because that's all that's been happening. There's been really zero, except for one caller, I think, on Jones and Keefe. There's been zero criticism of Drake May whatsoever, and he's taking it in stride, and he's saying the right things. One thing about Drake May is he almost always says the right thing.
Correct.
He really never steps in it. He hasn't really flubbed much. He hasn't even said anything that you sort of look at and go, huh, You could take that a certain way. Like, you can't even take the things he says in a bad way. And that's what we do. We twist people's words constantly all the time. How often do we get to do that with Jerod Mayo? Jerod Mayo steps in it every single day. Drake May basically never does. And I think that that's part of why people like him so much. They like that he's sort of this young kid. They like that he's got a sincerity to him. They like that he plays well. And they like his sort of backup and his background, I would say. That's all part of it. But when you ask him about stuff like that, he said it's all about wins for him. He doesn't stray from that ever. He doesn't talk about his own development. He really doesn't talk about anything outside of the scope of did the team win or did the team lose today. And if the team keeps losing, that's a question I think that Patriots fans are sort of wrestling with. Do you want them to keep winning games? Do you want them to be tanking for a better draft pick? What would you rather see? Right now, they're a 3-win team, and I think 6th on Tankathon, unless that changed since Thursday.
Right.
I think that's still where it is. And so with the 6th overall pick, you still probably get a pretty good draft pick there. It's not going to be quite as QB heavy this year, I think, as it's been in years past.
Not even close.
You're not going to be 1-2-3 all quarterbacks at the top. You still might miss out on guys like Hunter or some of these tackles who now people are saying aren't even tackles. But when it comes to that, the question now is what's more important? The idea that Drake May becomes more of a winner here in his rookie year, develops in that way, sort of walks off the field and know what it's like to have led a game-winning drive or just to have beaten a team like the Dolphins in Miami, a win on the road. Not a lot of that has happened so far, and I do think that when you're a 22-year-old in the NFL, that helps with your development just as much as many other factors. So what's more important right now, that Drake May and the Patriots go out and win games in these last 6 weeks of the season, or that they play well and Drake May looks good, but that they don't necessarily win so that they can continue building this team around them? Which one of those things is more urgent, Mega?
Certainly winning. Certainly winning. I know people want a top 5 pick. Some people want them to be a top 3 pick. I feel like we've had that conversation before, so I don't want to focus on why. I don't think it's like matters if you get the number 3 overall pick or the number 6 overall pick for what you're drafting for, because you have the quarterback. But on the other side, I also think that it is important for Jerod Mayo to establish the culture with the team, because he's almost certainly going to be the coach again next year. And losing is a really hard habit to get out of. And so I would like to see Drake May have moments where he does lead a game-winning drive. He does stage a comeback in the second half of a game. These are things that we never really saw with Mac. We saw them maybe twice throughout his entire career. Right. And so, like, I already feel that I really like Drake's makeup, his character, everything that we see out of him in terms of those intangibles. But I want to see that develop, and I really feel the only way that develops is by being in games and executing. And Arkan, earlier in the show, I kind of feel like that's what you were touching on, saying, what has Drake really done? Because he hasn't, marched down the field and led one of those game-winning drives. Mm-hmm. He's had moments, and he's certainly played awesomely, I think, through most of the time that he's been on the field. But I do think that he needs those experiences, and that's much more valuable than moving up 2 spots in the draft. Because guess what? You're probably not going to win more than 5 games. So you're probably going to be around there anyway, even though there's a bunch of bad teams in the NFL.
Like that drive at the end of the Titans game where mm-hmm. he tied it in regulation. And I still, to this day, have been pissed that Jerod Mayo didn't go for 2 to just win the game there. But that aside,
I'm still sore about that.
I'm so mad about it still, because that would have just, it could have erased that whole interception thing. It just, forget it. Anyways, that moment was a great building block for Drake, and you want to see more of those. And so I feel like I'm kind of Glenn Ordwaying this, is I don't feel like it's urgent to win. I want them to win. I want Drake to win and experience winning more and to really get a good feel for it. But at the same time, I just want him to play well, and I don't really care if they lose. Like, if they lose, like, it's like, okay, Tet McMillan looks like he could be great in this offense. The receiver out of Arizona there. I'm like, all right, that's fine. Like, if he's going to end up on my team, like, that's it. At the end of the day, I'm not going to complain. So I feel like I am being very much on the fence about this. I recognize that, but it's just kind of how I feel. It's like, yeah, would I like a win? Definitely. I would love to see them win. But if they don't, as long as Drake plays well, I don't really care.
Shime, they're also terrible at drafting on offense.
You're very right. That's absolutely true.
I think that they need to show something down the stretch to attract people to come here, or at least entertain coming here, so that you're not just
But doesn't
leverage
Drake do that?
I think that's what I'm saying, though, is that you need Drake to show out through these last
Even
couple
more?
Of weeks. at least to this extent, we've all been kind of like holding our breath, waiting to see if he's going to have this regression week. And we haven't really seen it yet. There's been moments where he's not as strong,
sure,
but we haven't really seen him have the week where we look at it, we go, oh, holy crap.
Yeah, he hasn't blown up.
What happened to him? And I do think that's going to happen at some point because he's a rookie and he's not perfect and that's just how it goes. But I think that you need to show something the way that Jaden Daniels did the first half of the season that make other guys around the league look at it and go,
I want to join that team.
That team's going to be good. That team is following the blueprint of the Lions. They're going to be good in a year or two, and I want to be with them.
Yeah, I think the winning is almost more important for Mayo than it is for May, in my mind.
Like, oh, it's, definitely.
Like, that, I think, is absolutely true. Like, if you want Jerod Mayo to be the head coach of this team for a long period of time, like, you want them to start winning a little bit so that you, as you said, Mego, can start establishing that culture a little bit more.
He also needs to get back to what he showed in the Cincinnati game. Like, that was a very organized, well-prepared,
the defense was flying around,
well-executed team. And I understand a lot of that personnel is falling by the wayside
sure.
for injuries or other reasons. But you still have never reached, there's no other way to say it, you have not reached that level of competency again across the board as you did in that game. And so I think if you could at least show that from Jerod Mayo's perspective, that goes a far way for him.
Yeah, well, as far as Jerod Mayo is concerned, I think that there's a lot of, you can look at all of their losses this year, and there's ways you can point to each part of what your guys are talking about, right? You can point to Elliot Wolf and say, well, you lost this game because you didn't have enough talent. You can point to Jerod Mayo and say you lost this game because you mismanaged the ball at the end of the game, or you mismanaged the clock at the half, or whatever, a bunch of little decisions that didn't come down to it, but you were in the game. They've lost games a variety of different ways this year, and I think that's to be expected when you have the worst wide receiver room in the league, the worst offensive line in the league, and the least experienced coaching staff in the league. And the only thing you really have going for you is your rookie quarterback who has to deal with all of that while also getting acclimated to the NFL. It's a lot to ask. It's a lot to put on somebody. And through, it's not 11 weeks of Drake May. It's now going to be like, what, week six of him as a starter, week seven? I think that you sort of have to take all that into account. In terms of this being highlight reel stuff and attracting free agents and things like that, I think that Drake May probably is looked at as a good quarterback, you know, someone that, yeah, if I've got to go play there, if New England offers the most money, I'm not going to turn it down because Drake May doesn't stink. It's not like I'm going to go play with, you know, Will Levis or one of these guys or something. But as you saw, if you offer the right amount of money, Calvin Ridley and DeAndre Hopkins will go play with Will Levis. Like,
oh,
they'll go
anywhere.
Do it. It's not that that doesn't necessarily matter. I think that, you know, people are looking at this, and I don't think that the Patriots are at the top of anyone's list, even with Drake May. They're not a team that people are dying to come over here and sign with. But if you're willing to go that extra mile, it's like the chicken or the egg, you know what I mean? Like, if you're willing to go that extra mile, you can bring guys in here who will play with Drake May. They'll play with Levis. They'll play with Drake May.
You can also trade for guys that don't have a choice.
That, too. You can also do that. And they've been reluctant to do that lately. They've been reluctant to pay. They've been reluctant to put those type of trades together. And I understand not doing it last year when you had the third overall pick. I mean, that's pretty extreme. But in general, I feel like this front office, this ownership, is just not quite there when it comes to going that extra mile.
So I have a question. When you look at, in terms of the front office, when you look at kind of acquiring talent and helping Drake May out, are you interested in going like the LA Rams route where it's like literally Les Snead is like, F those picks, I don't need them. I'm just going to trade for legitimate, like established talent in the league and make the best roster I can and then use, you know, third and fourth round picks?
Hold that thought. We do have inactives and they are here right now. Thank you very much. Your Patriots inactives are as follows. Not suiting up today for New England. KJ Osborne. Why is KJ Osborne
right.
still on this team?
Should have just cut him.
Joe Milton. Okay. Tyrese Robinson.
Okay.
Dietrich Wise not playing.
Tough.
That is tough. Jaqueline Roy also will not be playing.
Okay.
And someone named Titus Leo.
Linebacker.
Has anyone ever heard of Titus Leo before?
I think was he one of the like roster moves they made earlier this week?
I have no idea. This is the first time I've ever
Got
seen
me.
The name Titus Leo in my entire
my
name. Anyway, he will not be playing today. For Miami, no Jeffrey Wilson, the running back. No Ethan Bonner or Kendall Fuller, both corners. No Mohamed Kamara. No Andrew Meyer, no Jack Stoll, and no Dwayne Eskridge. Thank you very much. Those are your Dolphins inactives. This means a couple of things. Number one, Christian Gonzalez is certainly playing.
Yep.
Christian Barmore going to be out there as well. I think we expected Barmore, weren't totally sure about Gonzalez. And for the Dolphins, they're pretty much a full go. I mean, outside of Fuller stuff. Yeah,
that's good. That's good for the Patriots. I mean, it's good for Drake May. Like, that's one of their starting corners that won't be in this game. That's an opportunity for you to take advantage somewhere in the secondary.
Yeah, if you can find someone to throw to outside of
tomorrow. All right, fair enough. All right, Mego, stop bringing it on our parade. You know, it's just an opportunity.
The biggest thing is that Gonzalez is going to give it a go. So, I would expect that he'd be set up on Tyreek Hill, but again, he was on the boundary last week, so who knows what they're
going to do. Honestly, if he is hampered a little bit, I wouldn't be shocked if you see him on, like, Jonnu Smith a lot this game, where it's like, we just are going to match up our healthy corners.
You know?
He was in Tennessee, he was in Miami, just not New England, and that's, I don't know what happened.
He was with the Falcons, too, right? Didn't he have, like, a good year with Atlanta? Like, he's been good everywhere except here.
Because the head coach of Atlanta at the time, who's now the offensive, Arthur Smith, loved him in Tennessee. And then he was the head coach in Atlanta, brought him in, and he was fine. Like, he was better than Kyle Pitts when he was in Atlanta, which is wild.
Well, Kyle Pitts kind of blows, but yeah.
Kyle Pitts, great year this year.
Is he having a good
year?
He's having a very good year, fine. And I was thinking about that because Bowers is having a good year.
Bowers is lightning.
He's awesome. And
he's
the reason why he dropped in the draft is because of Kyle Pitts. 100%. People were scared to draft tight ends that high because Pitts looked like he was going to be a bust. But I guess he's having a good year now. I haven't really followed. I'm not playing the fantasy football.
Yeah, 500 yards receiving.
Oh, wow. All right. Good for him. Good for Pitts. Good for the whole Atlanta Falcons franchise. Jonnu Smith, who, again, is having a good season here. It just was a total disaster when he played with the Patriots and has now somehow reinvented himself yet again, this time with the Miami Dolphins. My biggest concern about this game today is that if the Dolphins get off to a lead, that's a type of pace that I'm not sure Drake May, as good as he is going to be able to keep up with and match with this offense around
him.
What
do you mean by pace?
The pace of them scoring quickly. You know, like, they're a quick strike team, and, you know, they get a couple of touchdowns, and you get a couple of three and outs. All of a sudden, you're down three scores, and the game's over. You know what I mean?
But then, like, he kind of kept pace with the Rams, and that's what they did last week,
that's
right?
That's true. They did do that.
And so, like, I always look at it, too. Again, with Drake May, a quarterback, they've been really good to start games. They get off quick. They get to start. They start with leads a lot of the time, and, 10-point leads multiple times now, and then they kind of blow it as time goes on. And so I guess I'm not too worried about Miami jumping ahead. It's really that middle of the second quarter into halftime, into the second half area of the game that I'm concerned about, because if you don't continue to score on offense, I'm just afraid that your defense is going to blow it, and that's when Miami would strike and really take a lead.
Yeah, I agree, though,
with Arkan on the idea that the Patriots were hanging their hat a lot last week on winning the possession game. Like, missing the big point that you were winning the possession game while they were just running you down.
Gerard Mayo said they controlled the game, right? Remember?
Right. Yeah, they had, four
because
straight touchdown drives?
They were able to just fly down through these fast drives and score. Like, that's not controlling
the game. I feel
like
in the second and third quarter, they scored every single time they had the ball.
I believe that's what it seemed like.
I don't know if it was exactly every single time, but it seemed that way.
Yeah, time of possession doesn't matter when Matthew Stafford drops back after two plays and then throws a 56-yard pass to Cooper Kupp for a touchdown. Like, that doesn't matter.
You're only choosing to look at the, like, bottom half of the scoreboard.
Yeah.
You know, and so I get what you're saying about the pace, where ultimately at the end of that game, they were in that game. They had the chance to win that game. But I do think that it's like tough to imagine holding this Miami team with the way your defense looks to under 20 points. And unfortunately, that's how you tend to win games.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to be able to do that.
Duggar is playing. Vidarian Lowe will be playing. These are all guys who were questionable and limited all throughout the week. Cole Strange playing, right?
I mean, that's true. He's not on the
inactive. He's not inactive.
They're not going to put him at center, are they?
I think they probably are.
Did you see him?
Where else would they put him? I mean, that's where he's been practicing, right?
Oh, God. Yeah, did you see the highlights of him at the Senior Bowl playing center?
No.
They were not good. This is not. If he plays center, it's not going to go well.
It's going to be, the fourth center that
You stick him in over Ben Brown, right?
Ben Brown, like, he hasn't been perfect, and I think he was stronger when he first actually started off of somebody else's practice squad. But I feel like they're just eager to get Cole Strange out there.
ESPN site still has Cole Strange listed as out and still on the PUP.
Oh, really?
This is just ESPN's depth chart. Like,
he practiced this week, though, didn't he?
Yeah, he did practice this week, so that's why I'm confused. Because it says 4 days ago, Strange is a limited participant during practice Wednesday, and yet they still have him designated as PUP Dash R.
He's not coming back till next week.
Okay, cool.
All right, well, never mind then. I got a little excited over nothing there. Anyways, so there you go. Cole Strange, not on the report, but not going to be playing. He won't be back until next week. He's not on the 53-man roster. Did not get activated. The Patriots now have 3 weeks to activate him, retroactive back to Wednesday. That according to Mark Daniels. So there you go. Sorry, jumped the gun a little bit there. 617-779-7937 is the phone number if you'd like to jump in on our conversation here. Patriots and the Dolphins kicking off in just about an hour and 15 minutes. When we return, we will break down Wiggy's keys to the game. That's coming up next.
Wow.
WEEI Football Sunday. Nice to have you with us today. 617-779-7937 is your phone number if you'd like to jump in on the conversation. Previewing here the Patriots and the Dolphins. It's Arcan, it's Mego, it's Chime Time, and right now it's Wiggy. Wiggy's keys. Let's get to key number one.
What up? It's Wiggy here. My three keys to this game is simple. Number one, and I've been saying, and I'm going to keep hopping on this one because I love it. Put Drake May on the move when he's throwing the football. Utilize his legs off of play action and bootlegs.
All right. Different first key. Usually I expect the first key to be establish the run.
Yep, generally.
get to the opposing quarterback, win the turnover battle, things like that. He's been saying this all along. I don't remember this key being a key before. He's saying that Drake May needs to get on the move.
Move around. Establish the run for Drake.
Establish the Drake run, which is a new one. It's a new key, I think.
It is, but yeah. I'm into it. I think he's right. I think you got to get Drake out of the pocket a little bit. He looks great when you roll him out, and he becomes such a weapon in his ability to be able to run or throw it down the field.
And I think his timing continues to get better.
Absolutely.
Like his timing with his receivers, obviously there was the gaffe at the very end of the game last week, but for the most part, like, I think when he leaves the pocket and he takes that minute, especially to find somebody like Hunter Henry a little bit downfield, it pays off.
Yeah, so far it has been. I think that the biggest detriment to him being more of a outside the pocket passer, by design anyway, is the offensive line. And, yes, you know, when you look at the tackles in particular, which is when you're bootlegging, those are the two main guys that have to protect the longest because he's going out and around. Then, you know, Vedarian Lowe, DeMontre Jacobs, whoever's been out there, they've gotten better at that over the course of the season. We just talked to Tommy Kern. He said that the protection's been better. I think in those cases specifically, you've seen a real improvement. And that's nothing small. I mean, with an offense like this, as inept as it is, you have to be able to find things that are productive wherever you can. And if that's one way of doing it, then fine. I agree with it. And I think that Wiggy's onto something there. All right, let's get to key number two.
Number two, you got to be able to slow down Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle.
It's right. Jaylen, but
what did he say, Jaden Waddle?
He said Jaden. I think he was thinking about his son.
Yeah,
he
probably
did go down to Georgia to see his kid play football. So.
Oh, well, that's good. Yep. Jaylen Waddle, very fast. So is HN, a very speedy running back there. Is Mostert playing? Is he playing today?
So he is, but he's the third running back now because McDaniel went through all those demotions and cuts and such like that with the veterans. So Mostert is their third running back. It's really going to be HN and Wright today.
Okay, yeah. And their other running back,
Jeff Wilson.
Yeah, Wilson. He scored a touchdown against the Rams.
He is inactive today. So
he's not playing. So there you go. All right. It's going to be, those two. And they're very, very quick. And I think that in general, this is the scouting report on the Dolphins every single week. They have great team speed. They are able to get open. They're able to get open in creative ways. They get the ball to their playmakers in space and try and let them make a play. Now, Tyreek Hill this year has not had a very good year. And I think that before you say, well, Snoop Huntley was the quarterback for a lot of those, even when they had other quarterbacks in years past, even when it was Skylar Thompson or Teddy Bridgewater or whoever the other backups happened to be over the last couple of seasons, Tyreek Hill didn't really miss a beat. Tyreek Hill would still get the ball on a screen or a slant or something and take it to the house because that's what he does. And this year, I've noticed, I mean, in the Dolphins games I've watched, he'll catch a pass or two, but he's much more of a possession receiver this year.
He's also been hurt, I believe,
a
little bit of this season.
He has that wrist injury he said was related to the traffic stop, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you take that for what it's worth, but you're right. He has not been the same. Jaylen Waddle has been nearly invisible at times this year. And so those two major weapons that you get nervous about haven't been great. And so I guess maybe that's an opportunity for the defense to look better. I don't necessarily expect it, but there's a chance.
Jaylen Waddle is on pace for 56 catches, 687 yards, and two touchdowns this year.
Yeah.
If you had him in fantasy, the T's and P's, because that's brutal.
Oh, you cut his ass weeks ago.
That is a brutal, brutal line there.
It's still take it for the Patriots.
Yes, I probably would too. Or, I'm sorry, Mego, I cut you off. What were you going to say?
No, I don't remember.
Okay. That's exactly what I did.
Very good. So let's get to our third key of the game.
And number three, put pressure on Tua Tagovailoa. Let's see a game where you can have three or four sacks to make him frustrated back there. Those are my keys.
All right. Thanks, Wiggy. Wiggy with the keys there. And that one, I think, is one that you put out there every single week. And with the exception of the Chicago game, is a key that they cannot seem to turn. You know, this is one of those keys that, yeah, everybody wants to put pressure on the other quarterback. You want to try and force turnovers. They haven't been good at that, and they have not been good at getting pressure. Forget about sacks, even just getting pressure on these quarterbacks. It just seems like they're unable to do it. I don't know, man. Keon White, I thought, was going to be the MVP of this team after those first couple of weeks. I thought he got shot out of a cannon and looked like a guy who was going to be a real disruptor up there on that defensive front. Since then, you see him more when he gets flagged than you do actually to see him get out there and pressure anybody. They're not sacking the quarterback. These guys who they're going up against seem to have all the time in the world. And even when they see the blitz coming, you know, it's become very predictable. If you can't get pressure with your front four, you bring that blitz, it's going to be easy for good quarterbacks to pick you apart. And Tua Tagovailoa, he might not be a great quarterback, but he's good enough to do that.
No, and Tom even told us when we had him on earlier how good he's been against the blitz and how accurate he's been. And so, like, that's going to be a massive issue. If you try to send seven against him and you can't get home like you didn't against Matthew Stafford, see you later, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, Jonnu Smith, Devon Achane, any one of the four taking it to the house. You're screwed.
This is like the key where you try to use the key and it breaks off half of it in the door and you're like, well, I guess we have to replace the whole knob.
A whole new door now. Yeah,
great. Thanks. I just don't really see much of a solution here. They've been able to get Christian Barmore back, but he's certainly not himself. So I don't think you're going to be able to generate that much pressure with the addition of him.
Yeah, you'd have to hope he makes a massive leap this week. I think that's an unfair ask.
I think it's
ask.
Too much to ask.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Also, no Dietrich Wise and no Jaqueline Roy. And Roy, whatever. I mean, he's been one of your better pass rushers this year. Dietrich Wise, not so much, but he's a guy who can set the edge. That's another problem that may arise now in the run game. You got Jennings on the other side. He's still playing. I'd like to see Ngakoue maybe get a little more snaps here. I don't know what else to do.
Yay.
I mean, I don't really think there's much else you can even say.
I'm so excited.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I like the idea of that key. I'm not sure that you can feasible. Actually execute it.
Yeah. Who do we blame the most for the lack of pass rush here? Is that a Mayo problem, a Covington problem, a Keon White problem? Like, who's the biggest culprit in the futility of this pass rush?
I don't think they do a very good job of generating pressure, so I would attribute a lot of that to DeMarcus Covington. But I also think that he's not necessarily working with, you know, A-level players. There's no Max Crosby, Nick Bosa, Joey Bosa, Khalil Mack, any of those kind of players.
Nope, just Brendan Schooler. That's it.
Yeah. Did they even use him last week?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah,
I don't remember him
did
out there.
Did they know that he can be used on defense as special teams?
That's definitely, you know.
Whoa, somebody better ask.
Yes, definitely. But it's just, so I put a lot of that blame on DeMarcus Covington because I think you need to scheme up better ways, stunts, disguise the blitzes, something. You have to do a better job of bringing pressure, and he just doesn't. It's very straightforward. I think, Arkan, you said it earlier, like they tell you how they want to play, and then they just play that way. And it's like, oh, you meant it when you said that. That's why we're caught off guard here at the beginning of the game, but we'll change that.
It doesn't feel like they have a great feel for when a quarterback is uncomfortable either.
None.
Like there's not a lot of in-game adjustments that would show that they're like responding to what they're seeing on the field.
Yeah, you have to take that Chicago game and throw it completely out. Mm-hmm. Like that Chicago offensive line was just so bad, you looked amazing because every other game you don't get pressure.
Yeah, it's basically the case. There's been very, very few instances of it. They've been few and far between. Maybe in the beginning of the season, I remember they got after Burrow a few times. And other than that, you know, yeah, it's the Chicago game, and that's basically it. So there you go. Those are Jermaine Wiggins' keys to the game. You can catch Wiggy every morning on the Greg Hill Show right here on WEEI, 617-779-7937. We've brought this up with our guests. We haven't talked about it, the three of us, yet. But Robert Kraft, once again, denied entry into the Pro Football Hall of Fame as a contributor. Instead, the immortal, well, not really immortal since he died 100 years ago, Ralph Hay is the guy who gets in this time around.
Who?
Ralph Hay.
Who?
Yeah,
Hay.
Of course. It's like Mike Jones.
Hi.
Ralph Hay is in. Robert Kraft is not. What is going on with this committee, and why do they hate him so much? We'll get to all of that with your phone calls next.